When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Toonaries podcast is proudly sponsored by Inline Eco, your trusted partner in asbestos removal and re-roofing services across Ireland. Your peace of mind and safety are our top priorities. For more information, visit inlineeco.ie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toonaries podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
We're back up in Ballymun with our friend, Keith Kelly. How are you, Keith?
All good, boys. All good.
You're in recovery like ourselves.
Yeah.
And you're also a victim of a violent crime, which you're going to talk to us about that. Yeah. But before we get into that, just tell us where you're from and know a bit about your context.
I'm from a small place out by Dunleary called Ballybrack. I've lived there all my life. Married with three kids and have a grandkid. At the moment, I facilitate mental health programs for a charity called Suicide Survive.
And Ballybrack is famous for?
I don't know.
The snapper.
Many things, but
But can you remember it being filmed?
No, I can't. No. Just a long time. I can't.
What was it? Late 80s, was it? Must be 1990, should have celebrated.
Yeah, the World Cup and stuff. Yeah.
What was it like for you growing up?
Growing up, I would have spent a lot of time out in the streets and that. I still have a lot of mates who I would have grew up with. I suppose when I look back now, I suppose I was always in conflict with myself, James. Mm-hmm. I never realised that till much later on in life,
Explain that to me a little bit.
I never got on with my dad, we were always in conflict, me and my dad. School was a no-no for me. I left school just before my 16th birthday. And again, I only realised much, much later on in life that I learned visually. Yeah. So for me in school to be trying to absorb stuff that was coming down off a blackboard and just didn't work for me. And I was told it was useless. Never amount to much in school, Spent a lot of time outside the door, spent a lot of time on the Mitch. Mm. School just wasn't for me.
What was sport?
Sport, I love football. Yeah, I played football all my life. And again, that's a lot. I suppose out on the pitch is where I could forget about everything. Do you know that sort of way?
Team from over your direction?
I used to play for Ballybrack Boys and then I played for senior teams, Cross Celtic, the Workman's Club, Dunleary Celtic.
Are they a GAA teams?
No, football.
Or soccer. Sometimes you come through.
I played football up to the age of possibly 26, 27,
What position did you play?
I played centre half and I played up front. I was a bit of a... I think I would have could have possibly been an awful lot better, but... We never gave it the full 100%, It's always distractions around,
You said something there probably, and I always felt that I could have gave it more as well. But do you know, because of the different things that were going on in my life, up in your head a lot as well.
Yeah.
I actually didn't have too much energy, as in like physically, because I was so much of a tinker. Yeah. I was using up so much of my energy as a young child. I knew I had potential and I knew I had the ability and the strength, but I felt so sluggish. Do you ever feel like that?
I was a hero for? Pre-season and we would go on road runs and my head would just say, no, I can't do this. and I'd switch off and I'd say, I'd drop out. Well, if I was doing pre-season, you know, short shuttle runs and sprints, nah, I could do that, no problem. But once I came to, you know, road runs or up climb the hill, up the steps and down the steps, I get booked too easy, you know?
Yeah.
Don't know why that was, but just, yeah.
It's gone back. If I ever go on a run, right, my head will come into me. You've enough done now.
Yeah.
It'll always, it's like the body is trying to come in, the ego section of the body, which is there to protect you.
Yeah.
And when the body's under stress, because it's not used to kind of doing exercise, it wants you to stop. That's what it sounds like to me.
But the manager would always give out, rightly so, because when I'd give up, it would have that domino effect for someone else to say, well, if he's giving up, do you know? So, yeah.
Do you want to take us back to the event, the traumatic event that happened, John?
Yeah, well, I suppose, James, that happened in 2008, so I had to sort of peel back to 2006 when I'm living in my house, bought a house across my ma's in 1990, and I've been living there ever since. So in 2006, I had a neighbour to the right of me, knew this guy, I was a bricklayer, he was a bricklayer, we worked, knew him all my life, knew his family, never had a bad word. But 2006, things started to go a little bit awry. I came home from work one day and my wife said to me, he's at the playing in the car outside the house. It was impossible. This was impossible for him to do unless he'd done it on purpose. But at the time, I wasn't, thought he was okay. He was a quiet guy. Knocked in. I said, what the fuck you had to do? And I said, sorry about that. Yeah. So I, being a neighbour, I said, listen, do you want to sort it out for cash rather than go through insurance? Yeah, no problem. Nothing happened for about 2 or 3 months. Wife's giving me grief, you know what I mean? She needed a car done, knocked in again. Yeah, I'll get it sorted. And I said, look, I think I'll take the piss out, you know what I mean? Get the thing sorted. Try to offer your way out here rather than going through insurance. Yeah, no problem. So anyway, a couple of months later, I got a phone call off the garage. Some guys are walking in here and dropping 600 quid and said, it's for your wife's car. You know, didn't come back to me and say, listen, I'm doing this. So strange things started to happen. He knocked into me then, a little while after. And I opened the door and he says to me, listen, I have to tell you something. And I said, yeah, okay. He says, I'm what have you talking on the sites about your wife? So I'm just letting you know. And I fucking says, you what? He says, and he broke down crying. And I it was such a shock to me that someone would say this to me. I didn't know what the fuck.
What reaction. Strange.
What do you think he meant by that? What was he saying?
He's obviously calling me wife a hero or whatever, you know, and all these sort of things. Yeah. So when I lived with my ma, where we grew up, his uncle was my next door neighbour. Get on great. So I said to him, Karen, I'm going to go over and have a chat with his uncle, you know, and see. Can you have a chat with his father? So I went over to his uncle and I said, geez, Mick, look, Mark was out there knocking into me, saying fucking strange things, you know, he's talking about my wife on the sites. Any chance you have a chat with your brother, his father? Like, he said, oh, look, I don't really want to get involved, you know what I mean? And so I said, okay. So then he would, this was going on, and then he would, in the middle of the night, he'd fucking blare the television, he put it, his music on, full blast, and he'd go out in the middle of the night in his car and just leave the house, pound it. Do you know what I mean? And this would go on and on, and I kept knocking in, and you know, things just with him start getting strange, and the curtains weren't being opened. And I went over the 2 year period, I went to the guards 8 or 10 times to complain about this. They kept telling me, no, look, there's nothing we can do, he hasn't actually done anything. But then he'd have cameras, I'd have to. Kid swings out the back. And I looked out one day, he'd cameras pointed down into my backyard and stuff. So I went to the guards again, and they came down, he took the cameras out the windows. But again, they said, look, there's nothing we can really do. I went up to his parents 2 or 3 times over the 2 year period. I sat with his mother and father, who I knew.
You were actually trying to resolve this the right way with conflict.
Absolutely.
I'm sure from by the sense of why I'm getting here is you're actually worried about this guy in a sense as well, because this kind of behaviour was completely mad.
Absolutely. But I thought I was going mad. Yeah. because the community I lived in, everybody knows, and he was obviously spreading rumors. So I went up to his parents a couple of times. The last time I went up to them, I went up with my brother, and I said to them, listen, is there any chance you fucking stop this madness? Like, he drove me around the twist, this lad. Now, Keith, your eldest son is getting out and pissing on my son's washing line, and I'm doing all his washing, and your wife's getting out in the middle of the night and she's keying his Jeep. I said to myself, I heard this. Look, we all defend our kids, but this was way out stuff. And I said to myself, fuck me, what am I going to do here? So one morning then in 2008 in January, I went to work. I was working, wasn't working too far away, building a house up in Killiney, and about 10 past eight, my wife and me says, get down here. He's kicking the fucking front door in. So I'm coming home in the car and I'm saying, I think I'm going mad because no one's believing the story, telling me, ma, what's going on?
Okay, Keith.
I was trying to resolve this.
Are you okay now?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I was coming home in the car and I said, what am I going to do? So I said, I'll knock into a neighbour and have someone as a witness. So I knocked into an air and said, you wouldn't mind coming in. I'm going to knock into this guy. He's trying to kick me front door. Knocked on the door and he came out. And do you know, by this time I was starting to get a little bit afraid of him. Do you know the sort of way?
He's a capable man.
Yeah. So my neighbours started 10 yards behind me. And so I said, what the fuck are you doing? Trying to fight my wife. He says, I heard just last night getting in the back window. He's out there robbing me life savings. And on my videos. I said, fuck me, no. Do you know, just, I didn't know what to say to that. I was glad the neighbour heard it, do you know what I mean? He said, yeah, I heard he's getting in the back, he's left a screwdriver at the back window and he's got in. Bizarre stuff. So I rang the guards straight away, they came down, told him what was going on. They went into him, they got back into me and he said, look, I don't think he's right, you know, in the head. What do I do? She said, well, he hasn't actually done anything. She said, no, I know he's saying all these strange things. So he went off in their merry way, left me and my wife to sit with that, you know, very strange. And I didn't really realise, but over that 2 year period, my own mental health was starting to suffer, you know what I mean? So that night, went to bed. That night was woken by two loud bangs trying to kick me for door, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I get up, look out the window at a raw door and bench in the front garden. Next thing I see him pick it up and he forced it straight through the front window. See him climbing in. So I'm in the fight or flight stage at this, you know what I mean?
Your kids in the house, teach?
Yeah, whole family. My eldest was 17 at the time, my daughter was 9 and my youngest was 2.
This is all happening.
So I ran onto the landing and met him on the stairs. I'm just in me jocks, you know what I mean? It's pitch black. He's a big, powerful boy, you know, so I'm grappling with him, get him down the stairs. And I didn't realise he had a knife. And the first time I realised, like, he had me on the ground and scraped me with the knife. And he stabbed me in the chest. And next minute, blood squirting everywhere, and I knew I was in trouble. Oh, for some reason, I found some sort of strength, and I got him downstairs. And I opened the front door, and I sort of collapsed. I didn't realise till later on, he punctured my lungs, and my lungs are filling up. And I saw it. So a neighbour dragged me in to his garden, and all I could hear was noises. I was going in there with consciousness. He had a towel on my wound, on my chest there. And again, for a while, I don't know how long it took for the ambulance to come or whatever, you know, I could hear strange noises going on inside. I ended up in the hospital then.
Did he take off?
Or did he just go back at home? I didn't find out till the next day or whatever what was still going on in there. I could hear noise and stuff. But my wife, in a panic, instead of ringing the guards, rang her sister. I don't know, you know, that number just came into our head. Me eldest lad, he ran and got help. So it was, I had brother-in-law and a nephew, and there was neighbours who went in, and a couple of them got slashed by him. He was up the stairs, saying, "I want my videos, I want me money." And then apparently the guards arrived. Again, I don't know, it could have been 10, 15 minutes. And they said to him, "Listen, he was at the top of the stairs, put the knife down, and they took him away. I didn't realise till only a couple of days later, but I was in total shock, James, you know. And I ended up in the hospital. I was out the back, and I could hear people talking. I was gone in there with consciousness. I didn't realise till the next day, but there was a mad thing. One thing I vividly remember right at that time was strange. I could hear a set of high heels. Do you know what I mean? Out of everything that was going on, I could hear that. I couldn't make sense of it. But so the next day, I woke up in the hospital. It stabbed me numerous times in the chest. It missed me main artery to my heart by millimeters, you know. It stabbed me in the shoulder and stabbed me in the face. My whole face was split open. Girl,
how many times did you say?
Four times. The girl, the high heels, was a plastic surgeon. He was going home, and just by chance, the inside of my mouth is all fucked up. She stitched up. You know, it was like when you walk up, I didn't know what was going on. Do you know, I was just numb, James. Yeah, I was numb to it all. I spent some time in the hospital. My house was in bits. So while I was in the hospital, my brother and friends sat, the walls were full of blood. Everything was a mess, you know. He'd actually kicked one of the doors upstairs off the fucking hinges. You know what I mean? People tried to close him into the bathroom. So people fixed up my house and that.
Your house, he was in.
My house, yeah.
Well, he didn't go into his own house and go upstairs.
No.
He went into your house.
Yeah.
Through the bench, through the front
room.
He went into your house, but you know, afterwards, after he'd done this, did he go back into your house?
No, the police took him away,
his house.
Or from his own, from your house?
Yeah.
So when all this happened and people started coming around and you were, he was up your stairs.
Yeah. He went into my wife's bedroom.
Did he have the kids gone out of the house at this stage?
My eldest son was.
Yeah, but the rest of them.
No, yeah. He went and he had my wife, he had the knife to my wife's throat. Two English kids were on the bed.
Jesus, that could have been a show murder.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I spent some time at the hospital, James.
Can I just bring you back?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you were on the floor.
I was in next door. Yeah, on the stairs, yeah.
Your head must have been on your kids and your wife.
Nothing. I just went into fight mode. And I suppose the adrenaline gave me the strength. This guy's a big fucker, like, and while I was grappling with him, he was slashing me, and I didn't realize he was stabbing me as well. But I found the strength to get him down the stairs somehow. But when I went, the neighbor took me in to his garden. He went up the stairs then to his wife,
How long were you in hospital for?
I was in hospital for 5 days.
What was it like when you went home?
I didn't go home initially first. I went to a brother-in-law's to recover because my house wasn't.
Yeah.
Do you know when I went home, James? I was numb for about 3 months. Absolutely numb. People were knocking and saying, "It's the great that, you know, you're alive, thank God." I couldn't feel that, you know.
He was on remand or was it like that?
Yeah. And
I was part of medication, I think.
Yeah. And do you know what happened? After I sort of came out of that numbness, I started having nightmares. Every time I pulled up to my house, it was like that image was like the Amityville house, you know that?
Yeah.
It frightened the fucking life out of me, do you know? And I never told anybody the extent to which how I was hurting inside. I felt a lot of shame. Someone had come into my castle and I wasn't able to protect. Do you know? I became afraid of the dark. I'd sit up with my dog at all hours. And for me, 6'3" guy, to be afraid of the dark, knocked the stuff out of me.
You know, it's very important for me to be listening to this here and James, you know, because once upon a time, the life I lived in crime and stuff, like this is my first time getting the perspective of somebody that's a victim.
Yeah, yeah.
The violence or crime. And I'm sitting there, I feel like crying.
Whatever.
You know, it's fucking...
Because you don't have, you don't realise, you know, the devastation, like when we do things
now,
for like, you don't realise at the time, you know?
Absolutely not. And I would have always had a drink, smoked a bit of weed, done drugs throughout my life, gambled. I didn't think I had really too bad a relationship with all them, but when I was in this mouth, I don't know anything to escape the pain. And over a 5-year period, my mental health deteriorates. Oh my God, nightmares I was having. Visualized myself at the top of the stairs every so often. I couldn't sleep. I'd stay up till all.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was afraid of that. You know, sometimes I was doing mad stuff. I'd have 1 foot in the sitting room, yeah? And 1 foot at the edge of the stairs. So I'm trying to turn off the light at 3 in the morning before I got up the stairs. And I never shared that with my wife or anybody because I thought I'm 6'3". Yeah. I can sort all this out. Yeah. But,
You're only human at the end of the day. And you're post-traumatic stress.
Absolutely.
Do you know when you're a victim of a violent crime like that, do you get any supports?
Like, you know what? Like initially, when I came out of hospital and stuff, I had to say the guards, it was a guard liaison officer, the guards offered me and the family some counselling, which we went to, but I wasn't in the state to absorb anything. Didn't work for me. So I said, nah, not for me, you know. I thought I could handle all this, James. Mm. Now I'm 6'3", guy, big man. Yeah. That's what I mean.
That's what we're brought up to believe.
Yeah. It's interesting, you don't have to say that now 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And it's like you're still saying to yourself like that you should have been able to prevent this, you should have been able to deal with it. It sounds like you're still a little bit hard on yourself because you're a big unit.
No, I tell you, I've come through that because I sort of reauthored the story.
Yeah.
But for a long time, I felt I didn't. Because remember I was saying to you for a 2-year period, as Jane or Timmy said, I was trying to do things the right way, going to the cards, trying to delegate with his family.
Yeah.
So going round and round in my head, you know, all the snares, what did I do? Why didn't I protect them? Why didn't I do something? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? It was always the boys. To the extent in 2013 where I just tried to take my own life,
When was this, do you want?
2013. 5 years I tormented myself.
After.
Without seeking help or telling anybody the true extent to which I was suffering.
Well, and during that period, the 5 years, Keith, what were you doing to maybe soothe yourself?
I was drinking.
Drinking.
Taking drugs.
Drugs and drink.
Gambling. Everything just magnified.
How was your wife and kids?
Do you know, Jay, I at the time, I possibly self-absorbed myself.
Yeah.
I had so much anger that built into rage. I wanted to kill him. I wanted to kill his family. And that just took over me. He sat with me every day. He made the bed with me every day. He was in the car with me every day. I just became overwhelmed, thoughts of revenge, and consumed by it. And I just turned into a shell, the person who I was, you know. Life became very difficult, you know.
That's the thing with mental health and addiction. The person that's going through the mental health issue or addiction, it's a very self-centered condition, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And we're only thinking about ourselves.
Absolutely.
And then there's the families, and they're obviously traumatized as well.
Absolutely.
But you're all caught up in your own head that you can't. You know?
He consumed me. Every minute of my day, I just wanted to revenge.
What happened with the suicide attempt? What happened around that, and how did you?
You know, suicide had been creeping into my head for a lot over the years. I just didn't want to go on, James. I fucking hated who I was. I didn't like who I was. And I knew my wife was going to a summer project with my kids one morning, so I knew she'd be gone early. So I took a load of pills that night. She was gone. I woke up. I was groggy as fuck. We're still here. So my wife was gone with some more projects. So I had a shed out the back. So I went out the back. Had a sun lounger out there, and I lay down and took a lot more pills. I was carrying so much shame.
Yeah.
Why couldn't I protect my family? Why how did I let this happen? That internal dialogue that was useless. It was crap. Can't protect my family. Why can't the man protect his family? Do you know, in a sort of way. I woke up that evening. I tried to stand up. I collapsed on the out in the shed. So much drugs in my body. I couldn't speak. So I crawled into the house. Crawled up the stairs. I think if they had been drinking the house along with the medication,
game over. Was that a turning point, yeah?
Absolutely. Do you know?
The Tuonaries podcast is proudly sponsored by Inline Eco, your trusted partner in asbestos removal and re-roofing services across Ireland. Your peace of mind and safety are our top priorities. For more information, visit inlineeco.ie.
I love my family. I didn't want to die. I was tormented, you know what I mean? I tormented myself. So I went to seek help, you know. I knew I couldn't go on. I knew I was a good person, but I was tormenting myself, do you know, sort of way. So I started to seek help. And one of the best things I was told early on was to do a bit of some exposure therapy around being afraid of the dark. So I'd go away at night with the dog. There's a clubhouse 100 yards away at a staffy. And he'd stayed up with me over them 5 years, watched me crying, and to know he's my best pal.
Don't dog, we've staffies as well.
You know. So I'd go 100 yards with him on the lead, and I'd come back home in the dark. You know, dark. I'd do that for a couple of months. And then we'd go a little bit forward. I would probably go 200 yards in the pitch black on my own. Do you know what I mean? And eventually, probably about a year later, we'd go a little bit forward and let him off the lid. And he's cute here with my dog. Stay beside me. Yeah, he'd been through with me.
He sensed the fear.
Yeah, absolutely. So
they're the most loyal dogs as well.
So that's how I got over that sort of fear of the dark. But I spent a lot of time was hypervigilant. Do you know that, like a meerkat, when he sticks his head up and he's scanning it?
Yeah.
It was sort of in 24 hours like that. I could walk to nearly pier. So lots of people walking to nearly pier, but I could that sense of someone behind me. I suppose when you're living like that, I never knew. Mentally, it was fucking me up. It's also doing things to me physically. I started to suffer a lot of leg pain. My back gave up. So while I was going through therapy, I was also engaging with my doctor, which I never did as a young. I only went to the doctor to get a script, to get 3 days off work. I never had, so changed doctors, you know what I mean? I had a good relationship with this new doctor. But 2014, my legs were giving me awful trouble. So she sent me in for a scan, and I have peripheral artery disease. If you can think of your arteries like a straw, mine were like threads in the legs. So I had to have a bypass. It's all connected to the trauma I was suffering with, you know what I mean? So I suffer chronic pain an awful lot now.
Yeah.
But going back to recovery, I was doing a lot of therapy. And when I had that operation, I said to myself, that's it. Gargle, drugs, gum, everything. That's it. I'm getting my life back together. Falling apart here mentally, my body's falling apart. Mm-hmm. And lucky enough, the therapists, you know, at this stage, I had no self-esteem, or no confidence. I was isolating. I was like a little child. He said, would you think about doing some voluntary work, you know, to reintroduce yourself, sorry, into society and stuff. Yeah. So lucky enough, I knew a friend of mine who sort of grew up, was a couple of years older than me, had a charity called Suicide Survivor, and they do educational and therapeutic programs, well-being programs. So she had a chat with her and she said, look, would you come up 2 hours a week, do something out the back, just, and so I'd go up 2 hours a week and be out the back getting the equipment ready for programs. People in the office say, how are you, to me, and just leave me to do whatever. But over time, then I started going 2 days a week. I started to build my confidence. And now I was grew up in the building industry, I'd never around an office environment. So even that was strange for me. These people were encouraging me, do you know what I mean? Give me lots of support. There's lots of therapists walking in and out of the office. And, you know, we'd have chats out the back. And I was still going to therapy and stuff. I started to get my confidence back over a year and a half, 2 year period. I always wrote poetry as a kid and done a lot of art. But I fucked it in the wardrobe. I was, who don't want to listen to me? Because they told me in school I was useless, you know?
Yeah.
So I started to get some sense of self back. I was trained up with Mel as a doing facilitation. And the word education to me in the past would have horrified me.
Because it's mind just school.
Absolutely.
But as an adult, it's completely different, isn't
it? It's more about knowledge.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And it's enjoyable as an adult, isn't it?
Listen, people in the office could see the growth within me. And they sort of said, well, just think about going back into education. I said, yes. Don't know, you know. They said, look, I think there's something there, the potential to, you know, for further growth. So I went to, I enrolled to do some counselling skills at Maynooth University. To me, Maynooth University was way out of my league. And on the journey there, I'd spoken to the tutor and asked, you know, who else would be in the class? And a lot of academics and teachers and stuff like that. So on the journey to Maynooth, of course, the old self-sabotage comes into the head. The fuck are you doing going to Maynooth University? Who do you think you are? And I nearly turned around, you know. And at this stage, I'd been doing lots of workshops and stuff, so self-development programs. So I went anyway, and do you know what I found within a three-week period? Every time I spoke, these people didn't really have the life experience I had, and I have value, and you know,
absolutely,
yeah. But I never thought that before, because people were telling me in school you was crap, and I loved it. I got a thirst for education.
I remember when I went back as an adult, and like that, and I was, you know, going into college for the first time, and what am I going to bring, you know?
Yeah.
And we were doing we had a law module, and I said it before, but I knew a lot about the law module because the court system,
because
of experience. With the young people in the class, they're like, fuck it, James is brilliant at the law, isn't he? Fuck it, maybe all these shitty life experiences was stand to me now. Because that wisdom and those experiences, you can't buy that.
So absolutely. I remember we were doing some CBT one morning in Maynooth University. We had to, it was true art. And of course, I love art. So we had to draw us pictures of some from our childhood and stuff. And I drew, because coming from where, Dublin, I didn't see sheep till I was much later on in life, not a sort of way. But I drew a picture of myself with my brothers in the car on a journey to a lighthouse down in Ballycotton. and the sky was all brown, and you know, we had to explain what her drawing was. So you know, she says, okay, Keith, well, can you explain what was brown? Do you know, there was no way of 50 in these days.
Was it that way from Ballybrack to Ballycott?
There was four of us stuck in the car, my man, that. The sky represents, you know, farting, the arguing. Four brothers in the car, you know.
Yeah.
My dad shut up. And I suppose for me, the lighthouse represented me. Fucking get out of this car. Bit of sanctuary. Do you know what I mean? And when I explained my story, a lot of the other people in the class had fluffy clouds and they weren't able to tell their story, because I don't think they were telling the true story that I was telling about my journey in the car, you know, the sort of way. And I went on, you know, my 25th anniversary, my wife, we'd booked a week away in Malta, 27 then. And then I got word from the office, listen, there's rap, I facilitate a program called rap as well. There's rap training in Weefield Prison for a week. Of course, what week was it on? Same week as my 25th anniversary. It was really important to me, you know, for going forward. So I had a chat with my wife. She agreed. So a friend of ours went with my wife, and I spent the week in Weefield Prison with lifers.
What was it like for you?
Oh, you know, brilliant.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
27 then, 8 people from prison, 4 of them were lifers. It was one of the best experiences of my life. Because you know, I could have took a turn and been on the opposite side of the table, do you know, sort of way.
But it would have been very understandable for you to live your life with a lot of bitterness, hatred, anger towards people that commit violent crime. But there you are in prison helping people.
James, I spent so much time in the blame game, blaming this guy for the way I was feeling, until I found acceptance and took personal responsibility. Like, I'm the only one who can fix my life. Yeah, he done this to me. And I carried him for 5 years. And it didn't do me any good. So I had to find some sort of acceptance to move on in life. You're stuck in playing the blame game. It's now moving forward.
Yeah.
Do you know?
What's life like for, you know, your recovery 9 years?
Life is good, but you know, sometimes awareness can be a bollocks.
Yeah.
Because when you're stuck in drinking and drugs, you've no self-awareness. Life is a hell of a lot better. Absolutely. The work I'm doing, like a privilege to do, working in prisons, working in communities. 10 years earlier on, I just recently done a workshop for 50 people around the corner. I travel around the country doing workshops and delivering rap programs, and I absolutely love it. Nice. To be in a room with people who are curious about their mental health, it's magic. It's like what you do, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, more of it, the better.
Yeah,
the more of it, the better. If you're ever coming to Cork, give us a show.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, just want to bring it back before we finish the gyms. I think it's very important, especially coming from somebody like yourself who's experienced your victim of crime, really. And this was...
No, do you know what? I'm not a victim, I'm a survivor.
Yeah.
I'm not actually a survivor, I'm a thriver.
Yeah.
That's 100%
to me. Yeah.
There's a thing called post-traumatic growth.
Yeah.
And that's where I am.
And sometimes you can really look at your experience as something that has maybe changed your life in a positive aspect.
Absolutely.
And that's just, it's not about getting stuck. It's not about a blame game. Even though, like, what happens, like, we've all had different things happen to us, you know. But if we get stuck in the blame game, we're actually losing the real benefit of life and moving forward. Like, we've all had different, as I said, different things happening to us, but at some point in our lives, we truly have to move on and thrive as you have. And like, I could have sat back, and James could have sat back, and I've done shit to people that I'm very, very...
I stood on people as well when I was going through shit.
I don't want to keep listening. listen, as we were sitting here, and I was listening to your story, like, and a lot of stuff was going on for me internally.
Yeah,
and it was bringing me back to times that I'd done different stuff to different people who didn't deserve it, who were completely innocent, you know, and that's why I got so emotional there earlier on, because I was going back and you were talking about how you were getting through it, and my head was saying, like, poor people like that are struggling in the same way, and it really hit me really, really hard, you know. But bringing it back to the point is, if we get caught up in the story of what has happened to us, and the blame game, you know, I think we get stuck there, and the longer you stay there, the longer you're really taking life and the benefits of life away from yourself as an individual, you know. And a traumatic experience like that, and try to understand that it can be something that can be very beneficial for somebody to help them to grow.
Absolutely.
By the therapy. Yeah. The therapy could be initially around traumatic experience, but other stuff could come up.
Yeah.
And there could be real beneficial healing around that as well.
Yeah. Oh, you know, when I reflect on life now, I used to blame my dad and everything, you know. God forbid, my dad died when I was young and didn't get on. When I look back now, you know, I was bringing some stuff to the party as well. It wasn't all his fault, you know, in a sort of way. Yeah. Well, I never got the opportunity to say that.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that, and it's strange to say, maybe if that incident hadn't happened, I'd have been still a bricklayer, out drinking, doing stuff.
Forced just to do the work on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You have to look for the silver lining around these things.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. I think this podcast will help victims of crime that are listening, that may be stuck, try and move on.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, have a more fulfilled life. And for perpetrators of crime, maybe think about some of the actions that they can't undo.
Yeah.
But just to make sure that doesn't happen in the future.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks to meet
you. You're welcome.
The Toonaries podcast is proudly sponsored by Inline Eco, your trusted partner in asbestos removal and re-roofing services across Ireland. Your peace of mind and safety are our top priorities. For more information, visit inlineeco.ie.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.